And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can listen to this show, of course, live every single Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock on Joy 620, or you can wait and listen to the archives. You can listen to the podcast on, of course, you can find it at investinghope.com as well, or you can find it wherever podcasts are found, iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn app. We would appreciate your listening. And for those of you that have been listening for a while, I certainly appreciate it. And the reason I bring that up is because something I'm going to talk about today is something I talked about probably a year ago, maybe not quite that long ago, but it's kind of coming to its head here in the next few hours. And so I wanted to talk about that because as we look at the issue of life and abortion in this country, we also are paying attention to what's going on around the world, and there's some things that are happening in Northern Ireland that I think it's important that we talk about and kind of see the response to it when it comes to abortion and what Christians are doing, what pro-lifers are doing in that, and how the I guess how both sides, those that would claim to be pro-life, those that would claim to be pro-choice, look at this issue very differently, and so we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about some things that are going on around the country and when it comes to young people and the porn epidemic and things like that. And there's a recent survey and study that's been released that's kind of opening our eyes to what's going on and what our young people are dealing with, not just young people, but what men and women are dealing with when it comes to that epidemic. And so we're going to talk about that. And so we do got a few things to cover. Also, this week is Battle the Bottles week between Grace and CAK. And so this Friday night at the football game between Grace and CAK, we will announce how much money has been raised between both of those schools for Hope Resource Center. And since the beginning of this Battle the Bottles program, you know, just a few years ago, 2011, 2012, we have raised over $145,000 from these students filling bottles up with change, and we're certainly grateful for that. And we'll have you an update next week on how much money was raised. Before we do that, though, what I want to do is kind of shift focus to Northern Ireland. So there's an article over at CNN, and I'm going to read you parts of that, and then we'll discuss what's going on in Northern Ireland. So some Northern Ireland Assembly members were returning to Stormont on Monday for the first time in nearly 3 years in a last-ditch attempt to prevent the province's abortion law from being reformed by the UK government. It comes as Westminster gave the region until midnight, October 21st, to reach an agreement and restore its power-sharing government, warning that if the deadline was missed, it would step in and reform Northern Ireland's laws on abortion and same-sex marriage directly from London. The power-sharing executive collapsed in 2017 because of a spat over a renewable energy policy. Monday's likely short session of the Assembly was triggered after anti-abortion lawmakers signed a petition triggering a recall to discuss the decriminalization at Stormont. The signatures were mostly made up of Democratic Unionist Party members. Abortion law in Northern Ireland is considerably different from legislation in the rest of the UK, with the procedure carrying maximum sentences of life imprisonment, even in cases of rape, incest, and fatal fetal abnormality. One lawmaker, Arlene Foster, said in a statement that last week that she urges other folks who oppose the extreme liberalization of our abortion law to step outside any party shackles and join us in recalling the Assembly. She added that it was time to get Northern Ireland moving again. Despite efforts by the politicians and other anti-abortion lawmakers, the recall isn't likely to affect Westminster's plan to change Northern Ireland's law. Again, I'll point out, and I pointed this out last week too as I was discussing some of these things, just notice how they write these articles and how they label folks that claim to be pro-life. They always, always label us as folks by what we're against. So it's not It doesn't say despite efforts by politicians and other pro-life lawmakers. It says despite efforts by politicians and other anti-abortion lawmakers. But the crazy thing is you're told by a lot of folks there is no one that's pro-abortion. But yet, for some reason, there's a lot of people that are anti-abortion. Again, I'm not upset by that label. I am certainly anti-abortion and do not apologize for that. But it's funny how they write these articles to push a narrative a certain way. And so they go further. Arlene Foster's proposal to recall the assembly on Monday is a pointless political stunt, which has literally no impact unless its business is to appoint an executive who does have the power to effect legal change, a spokesman said. The region's complex power-sharing arrangement established as part of the peace process means that both the Nationalist Party and the Unionist Party must work together and appoint a first minister and deputy first minister who will lead the executive together. So that's where we are in Northern Ireland, is they are, they had a spat. And so the UK, leadership in the UK is now coming in and saying straight from London, we're just going to make you change some of these laws. We don't like the fact that you do not allow for abortion. And so it's interesting to me, if you go on social media, you'll see a lot of folks are claiming this is a human rights win. You'll see a lot of folks that say this is a win for women. But in making that argument, they completely neglect the fact that there are humans that are losing, that are going to lose their lives because of this. Humans growing in the womb that are going to lose their lives because of this. Women growing in the womb that are going to lose their lives because of this. And so an email was sent out from a husband and wife, Keith and Kristen Getty, who are Christian singers in Ireland. And I wanted to share it with you because it shows some boldness that they would say this, that they would boldly seek to do something when so many folks that have the platform that they would have do not use that platform for good. They use that platform to speak out on issues that everybody agrees with, or to speak out on issues that shows that they're woke, but they don't use the platform to speak out on issues that are tough, like the abortion issue, but these folks have done that, and I want to read you their email. They said, "Dear friends, we stand on the edge of the greatest evil to ever reach Northern Ireland. In our whole lives, we have never written on political or social issues, so why break such a silence now? Especially as we've always rolled our eyes at musicians' political opinions after all. A law will be passed on Tuesday in Northern Ireland that will represent a genocide of human beings that exceeds by far the even horror of Northern Ireland's troubles, the Civil War. Until now, Northern Ireland has successfully blocked legislation to legalize abortion, and since the UK Abortion Act in the 70s, 100,000 lives have been saved in Northern Ireland because of our laws. On Tuesday, all of this changes. As we sit with our four daughters, we are trying to digest the almost incomprehensible wickedness of the pro-choice lobby, whose efforts will ensure that many children will never take their first breath out of the womb. Additionally, babies who have not yet reached 28 weeks will not have the full protection or rights they need. Lord have mercy. It is a tragic judgment on the state of our world, but it is a tragic judgment on the prayerless state of our church and each one of us that this scourge on society has been allowed to be legalized, sanitized, and even celebrated. The truth is, for all we may have prayed or done, there was so much more we left undone. So much more we could have said, so many more doors we could have pushed, and so many more prayers we could have uttered for the lives of these innocent infants. Lord, have mercy. For all we could have given, lead our culture. We have chosen to hibernate in our own self-centeredness and not show our God in his overwhelming glory, who fearfully and wonderfully made us and so loved us that he sent his Son for our lost humanity. And it is to him we plead for mercy, for a miracle by midnight. And if he does not intervene, we pray for the children and their mothers and fathers for the same Savior to bring beauty out of the ashes. We struggle to find any words. In these moments, we turn to the Psalms and tonight to the beautiful old language we grew up with in the Scottish Psalm in Psalm 85. Wilt thou not in mercy turn and be our life again, that thy people's heart may burn with the gladness of your name. Please pray today for Northern Ireland. Please pray for the leaders of Northern Ireland. There are many working hard for life. The ugliness of it all is hard to describe, and a fair place to speak nearly non-existent. Please pray for the local church there, for compassion, innovation, courage, boldness, and conviction. Please pray for those groups tirelessly advocating for the protection of mothers and their babies. And that is the email from Keith and Kristen Getty. And so that's what's happening in Northern Ireland. And I bring that up. I understand that most people listen to this or are going to be listening to this from the United States of America. And you're like, well, what do I care what's going on in Northern Ireland? Well, if we are a pro-life people, if we are a gospel people, then we certainly should care about image bearers around the globe. And we should care that, laws are being changed to legalize abortion and make abortion readily accessible in Ireland. And we should care that other citizens, other folks are celebrating the fact that a right is going to be enshrined to allow for the taking of an innocent human being. You see, because that's what abortion is. And I know that, that makes some people uncomfortable, but the fact remains, and I've said this multiple times on this show, that a successful abortion ends a heartbeat. A successful abortion ends a life. A successful abortion ends a pregnancy. Well, what is a pregnancy? A pregnancy is a life growing inside. And a botched abortion is when a baby survives the abortion. So when folks are celebrating the fact that we're allowed to have abortions, when folks are celebrating the fact that now women will be able to take the life of the child inside of them, they're not simply pro-choice in that instance. And shame on us as a society, shame on us as, a group of, human beings that, have decided there is another group of human beings around us that do not have a right to life. It says a lot about who we are as a society. It says a lot about the brokenness, about the culture that we find ourselves in where people are shouting and celebrating the right to take the life of a human being. It's a weird place to be. It's a frustrating place to be. But I would ask that you would pray for those in Ireland. Pray that something would happen, something would occur where these laws would not go into place. We'll talk more when we come back. You're holding my arms when I'm battle torn. Oasis within me. You're the oasis within me. You are colors in the sky after 40 rains. In the thick of the night, you're the break of day. Oasis within me. You're the oasis within me. So as we continue the conversation, I would ask you again to please be praying for the folks in Ireland as they look to stand for life. There's a lot of folks that are trying to do that, trying to fight for the life of those unborn children, but it's an uphill battle for sure. So what I want to do now is shift a little bit to some social media talk. And so if you're on social media, you know that there's a lot of back and forth when it comes to pro-life and pro-choice and politics and everything that comes along with that. There is a certain person on Twitter. She's a doctor. She's an OBGYN. She's a New York Times contributor. And I just want to give you a hint of this is why I get upset when people say, well, no one's pro-abortion. Well, I want you to read, you can't read it because it's the radio, but I want to read to you what this doctor wrote on Twitter. And then you tell me if no one is pro-abortion. She tweeted this 4 days ago. A fetus is not a baby. A fetus is not an unborn or preborn baby or child. If your goal is to legislate medical care, you have to use medical terminology. And then she says, I will call you out each and every time. And she used some profanity in there as well that I edited out of that. She goes on further, it's not medical terminology, but while we are here, tell me how you have devoted your life to providing, because someone called her out on it, a lot of people called her out on her tweet. And she says, tell me how you have devoted your life to providing free prenatal care, banning tobacco, and ending racism. Or are you selective about your devotion to fetal life? And then somebody went further and said, have any of the anti-choicers, that's what they would call us, anti-choicers, actually replied to tell you how they work to protect pregnant women and babies? I seriously doubt it, but I'm curious. You see, here's the thing. And somebody, and I appreciate it, somebody tagged me in that tweet and they wanted me to start going back and forth and engaging with the doctor on Twitter. And the old me would have spent hours going back and forth and saying a lot of things on Twitter, but that's not how we do. That's not the best use of my time. That's not the best use. That's gonna take me down a dark path. So I didn't. But here's the thing. There's a lot of folks. There's over 3,000 pregnancy centers in this country. As we said last week or a couple weeks ago, we've seen a 53% decrease in abortion since 1973. During that time, we've seen an 86% increase in pregnancy centers opening their doors. So there's a lot of folks that are devoting their life to helping moms and their babies in times of crisis. So for those that would say, well, I don't see any of these pro-lifers doing anything for these moms and their babies, I would just simply say open your eyes. Open your eyes. And it points to ignorance when you say no one is doing anything, because there's a lot of folks doing something. Hope Resource Center being one of those, one of thousands that are doing work. And I'll go further. I also received a message on Twitter. I tweeted the other day some things about life and abortion, and some guy sent me a message, and here's what he said to me. Fetuses aren't humans, my man. That's what he said. It's not a person until it can mow my lawn. Jesus thought so too. So there's a lot of good folks on Twitter, for sure, looking to attack and come after those that would stand for life. And so the reason I bring those things up is because, first off, when I'm encouraging you to engage and talk with folks, I'm not encouraging a shouting back and forth, which is often what happens on social media, is a shouting back and forth. So if I post something, and yes, I post a lot of things on Twitter. If I post something and it gets a lot of play or it gets a lot of interaction, I'm not going to spend a lot of time going back and forth with people. Because you're not going to win an argument on social media when it comes to those issues. So when I have one-on-one conversations, those are the things I want to do, is I want to have that conversation, a back and forth on, well, is it a life? Is it not a life? What does this mean? And where do rights begin? Do constitutional rights start in the womb or not? Do we have a fundamental right to life or not? Do we believe that life begins at conception or not? Do we believe it's a clump of tissue or a blob of cells, or is it a human that is growing with its own DNA, with its own blood type, with its own organs, with its own brain, its dreams, eyes, fingerprint? You see, these are the questions that we want answered, and these are the conversations that need to be had. But what social media has done is it's allowed for everybody to have a voice, which is a lot of good things. It's really good. We celebrate the First Amendment. So even as crazy as some of the folks on social media, and as much as I disagree with them, what an amazing place that in time that we live where somebody can say something like that and interact with folks. That's a great thing. But what I would say to you is, and I have to say this to myself too, is we could spend a lot of time in those social media arguments and going back and forth and trying to convince folks in the comment section. Or we could make a post and we could make a statement, a bold statement that we want to make on social media, and then we could walk away and go actually put actions to our words. And so then when people are saying, well, I bet no one's commented and told you how much they're helping these pregnant women and their babies, we can look at our own lives and go, yeah, the reality is that's what we do. I partner with a place like Hope Resource Center, and that's what they do. Or in my case, I get up every day and go to work at Hope Resource Center to do exactly what that person said we're not doing. We are absolutely helping moms and babies. I wish I could tell you what's going on right now. As I speak, there's a patient that we are helping and serving, going above and beyond. And I can't go into details, but shame on anyone that would say we're not helping moms and their babies in their time of crisis. I can assure you that we are. But you see, we don't do it to get the accolades. We don't do it so that the New York Times will come write a story on us. We don't do it so the morning shows will come out and interview us and celebrate us. We don't do it for that. We do it because the folks that are coming to our center are image bearers. That's why we do it. Because they deserve the help. They deserve the love. And they deserve the care. And so I get worked up when people say, well, if these pro-lifers would just do something, who do you think's adopting? Who do you think's fostering? Who do you think's providing respite care for foster parents? Who do you think's staffing and volunteering at these pregnancy centers? I mean, it's craziness to say they're not doing anything. The real question is, if you are pro-choice, then when a woman chooses life, shouldn't you celebrate that and step out and help her? But I don't know of any abortion clinics providing baby showers. I don't know of any abortion clinics that are championing adoption. Seems to me that Planned Parenthood and others, all they ever talk about is abortion. Which again, I mean, if all I ever do is go around, here's an illustration. I love Sun Drop. It's a drink. It's an amazing drink. It's been a part of my life since I was a child. I celebrate Sun Drop all the time. Because of that, it would make sense for people to say, man, Andrew is pro Sun Drop. Yeah, I am. So when we see these organizations, all they ever talk about is abortion. Well, it's 3% of what we do, but man, we're going to fight everything. We'll lose money if that's what it takes to make sure abortion is accessible. One could argue they're pro-abortion. Just the other day, Tulsi Gabbard, who's running for the presidency on the Democratic ticket, or she's in the primary, she came out and said safe, legal, and rare. Abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. And what happened? Did the party come out in support of that? No. Hillary Clinton called her a Russian asset. Why? Because she's hurting the narrative. You see, it's not safe, legal, and rare anymore. It's any time for any reason, no matter what, and the taxpayer should pay for it. You see, that's where we have gotten to. So if the mantra was still safe, legal, and rare, one could argue they're not pro-abortion. They just are seeking to help people. But see, that's not the mantra anymore. The mantra now is shout your abortion. Celebrate your abortion. It's your body, your choice. And when you seek to have conversations outside of that, it doesn't work. And so when people call us anti-abortion, I'm anti-abortion, but first and foremost, I'm pro-life. You see, a lot of folks will say, well, pregnancy centers are the alternative to abortion clinics. I would say, in a little bit different way, no, abortion clinics are the alternative to pregnancy centers. The primary choice when you find yourself pregnant is to have a child. That's the primary objective. The alternative choice would be have an abortion. So it's not that pregnancy centers are the alternative. It's the other way around. Abortion and abortion clinics are the alternative to life. And I'm grateful that we get to do the work we do at Hope Resource Center to serve the patients that come in our doors. That's what being pro-life is about. We care about these folks. And we're going to be there for them, and you help us do that. We'll talk more when we come back. There's no distance in your embrace. Over and over again you say, I am loved. Father, I'm loved by you. Oh, I am. So as we continue today, what I want to do is shift gears just a little bit and talk about an article that's over at fightthenewdrug.org. Fightthenewdrug.org is a an organization that is fighting against pornography around the globe. And this article is a bit dated, but I thought it was important because this is what our young people are dealing with. This is the demographic that find their way to Hope Resource Center. For folks listening to this, your kids may fit this age group. So I think it's important that we look at this. And I wanted to go through the article and then we can talk about it from there. And it starts with this, a quote: "I want better education regarding sex for both boys and girls and information about pornography and the way it influences harmful sexual practices." These are the words of Lucy, aged 15, one of 600 young Australian women and girls who took part in a just released survey commissioned by Plan Australia and Our Watch. The survey gathered responses from the girls and young women ages 15 to 19 in all states and territories. In the survey report entitled "Don't Send Me That Pic," participants reported that online sexual abuse and harassment were becoming a normal part of their everyday interactions. And while the behavior seems so common, more than 80% said it was unacceptable for boyfriends to request naked images. Sexual bullying and harassment are part of daily life for many girls growing up as a part of this digital generation. Young girls are speaking out more and more about how these practices have links with pornography because it's directly affecting them. Pornography is molding and conditioning the sexual behaviors and attitudes of boys, and girls are being left without the resources to deal with these porn-saturated boys. If there are still any questions about whether pornography has an impact on young people's sexual attitudes and behaviors, perhaps it's time to listen to young people and themselves. Girls and young women describe boys pressuring them to provide acts inspired by what they consume on their digital devices. Girls tell of them being expected to put up with things they don't enjoy. And the article goes on and on and on from there. And so the interesting thing about this article is it goes all the way to seventh graders that are seeking help on what to do with requests for naked images. Seventh graders. That is where we are as a society. Seventh grade girls are asking questions about bondage and S&M. It says many of them have seen 50 Shades of Grey and wonder if a boy wants to hit them or tie them up or stalk them. Does that mean that he loves them? You see, this is why it's important that we know what our kids are watching. Look, we're not perfect at the Woodhouse. We have one TV. One TV in the entire house. Typically, if it's on, we're all watching it. We have an Alexa device that plays music. And even with all the parental controls that I have on that, my kids have seen things they shouldn't see. My kids have heard things they shouldn't hear. My oldest is 8 years old. He's the only boy. And he's always asking me for a phone. Why do you think he's asking me for a phone? Because he's got friends that have phones at 8 years old. So it's no wonder that we have seventh graders asking and asking for help. Well, so-and-so asked me to send them a picture of me. You see, this is what we're dealing with in a porn-saturated society. And I always thought it was interesting. John Piper once talked, and if you're not familiar with him, Google him. He's a pastor and theologian, one of the best of our day. And he talks about when he was a child, when he was probably middle school, he saw an image inside of a Playboy magazine. And that image, he said, is seared into his brain, and it still makes him stumble and fall to this day. Now, Piper doesn't have a TV in his house, but he points to that image from back in the day. Back in the day, that's what you had, is you had to go and either your parents had bought a magazine or your friend had a magazine. It was about magazines. Now it's on their phones. It's on their iPads. It's on the computer. And then as parents, we think, well, we can't get rid of the iPad. We can't get rid of the computer because we use those things as well. Well, they need a phone. What if they're at practice and they need to let me know? But these are the things that are happening in our society and in our culture. And so when the Me Too movement occurs, well, don't be surprised. You know, and as a dad to one son and three daughters, I often think about not just my daughters, but my son. What kind of predicaments are they putting themselves in? What kind of situations are they finding themselves in? Are we creating an environment in our home that they know they're validated, that they know that they're worthy, that they know that they're loved and valued? Or is that not the environment at the house? So they're going out and they're seeking that validation, they're seeking that love, they're seeking that value from other places. So who's teaching them about sex? Who's teaching them about their body? Is it the world? Is it other students? Is it the television? Is it music? Or is it mom and dad? Or is it just mom? Or is it just dad? Or is it grandparents? Who is the voice in their life? And I wish I could say, look, this will pass. It'll get easier. Well, it's not. It's not going to. It's only going to get worse. You know, it's interesting. We are the most connected people this world has ever seen, while being the most disconnected people this world has ever seen. And what I mean by that is because of social media, because of phones, because of our digital access, we have access to everything. Everything. Every book you can think of. Every show you can think of, every video you can think of, everything is at our fingertips. But relationships are falling. Relationships are broken. No one has real friends. It's, well, they follow me on here, they follow me there. And so we're disconnected. We're seeing less marriages. We're seeing less pregnancy. We're seeing less of all of that because folks are just living in a fantasy world. And so when you live in that fantasy world and you're constantly being fed that fantasy nonsense, then when you finally get a chance to sit down with a real human being, you don't know how to act. And so that's why we are dealing with these issues with our young people. Look, I'm not telling you to be a helicopter parent where you're just involved in everything and you don't give any freedom to your children. I'm not saying that at all. But don't go the other extreme where they just annoy you so you give them a digital device. Well, because they get on my nerves, I'm going to give them a phone. Or because they get on my nerves when we're out in public, I'm going to give them an iPad. That's not the direction we want to go. What kind of conversations are we having with our children? I was just talking today with some of the staff, and we had a patient come in that's just dealing with a lot of stuff, a lot of struggle, brokenness in her family. A lot of brokenness, chaos. Just doesn't know what's going to happen next. And I told the staff, I said, look, my parents divorced when I was 14 years old. They were married for 22 years. And that's part of my story. And it forever changed me. But here's the reality. In that divorce, my mom and dad's relationship ended. But I had two parents that loved me, still love me. If anything, my complaint after it happened was my dad wanted to be too involved in my life. That's craziness. There's people out in this world that would go, what, your dad was too involved? He loved you too much? And then on top of that, my mom remarried to an amazing man. So I have two amazing dads and a mom. And so, yeah, the divorce wasn't awesome. But at no point did I wonder, do my parents love me? Do they care about me? So even in that messiness, they let it be known that I was cared for. And so we don't have to have it all perfect. You're not going to. We're sinful. Relationships are going to be messy. It's going to happen. But The Lord has entrusted us to parent our children. Or if you're listening to this and you're a teacher, how are we educating our children, those that are in the schools? What are we doing? What kind of conversations are we having? How are we showing them their value isn't in their in what their body can do, but they have such greater value, intrinsic value, because of who made them? And so these studies that I just referenced, they're not going to get any better until we're prepared to step in and change things. To care about. Not to say, well, I'm an old prude, and so, yeah, I know I would rather them not watch that, but I don't want to be the non-cool dad. I'd rather them not play Minecraft, but I don't want to be the non-cool dad. I was at the dentist office with my kid this morning, and he kept wanting to get my phone and look at it. You know what I said? No. No. Every time he asked me, no. No, you can't have my phone. You know what? It really is that simple. And so these are the conversations that we got to have, because what we're doing in this porn-saturated culture is we are changing what marriage is, we're changing what sex is, and we're feeding our young people and letting them know that their value is in laying down instead of their value being intrinsic value given by God. And so we need to have some conversations around this. Sex was created by God for something. And the fall kind of broke all that up. And so these are conversations that are important. We'll talk more when we come back. In the cross and save my soul. All else is lost. Yeah. The grief I fear has no hold on me. So where, oh death, where is your shadow? No longer I. And we're back as we continue the conversation. I do hope today was productive. I hope it's useful to you to hear about things that are going on around the world, to look at studies and different articles that are being published, maybe that might not be populating your news feed, and that's okay. That's the point of the show, is hopefully we're bringing you some of the information that hasn't made it to your news feed, and so that's what we want to do. Is certainly a lot of this information isn't making it onto the cable news shows. They may have written about it, but they may not be talking about it or spending a lot of time talking about it on air. And so I wanted to do that today. So as we move forward, I just would say continue to be engaged in that. And so, yes, we want to have conversations. We want to be vocal, all of those things. But we also want to do something. We want to partner. We want to get involved in the work that's being done. And so when we say that we're pro-life, well, then let's do something about it. Let's partner with pregnancy centers. If that means you're here in Knoxville and you want to partner with Hope Resource Center, we'd love for you to do that at investinghope.com. If that means you're somewhere around the country, in a different state, around the globe, there are pregnancy centers that are there for you to partner with. A number of folks that are there waiting for you to partner with them. I had somebody post the other day that they now have, I think, I don't know how many children they have fostered, but they have adopted 4, I believe, at this point. And it was really sweet and nice. She said that she always been pro-life, and that she heard, she was at church, one of the churches I spoke at, and talked about fostering and adopting. And the very next week, she went to a class to be certified and be able to foster. And that was the moment. That's what she needed, was that little extra nudge. And so, can you be that nudge for somebody, or maybe the work that's being done at Hope Resource Center is the nudge for you to get involved and mentor folks and love on folks? And we have 20 to 24 baby showers coming up in the next few weeks for moms that are in parenting class at Hope. That means in November we're going to have a baby shower, and 24 pack and plays are going to be handed to moms. 24 car seats. Diaper bags, diapers, wipes. bathtubs. You see, none of that is possible without your partnership. We are fully funded through folks like you. That none of that would happen without you standing and saying you're going to serve with us. And so those are the opportunities. Sure, I want people to know I'm vocal. Absolutely. I want my kids to know that their dad is going to speak out on issues. I do want that. But I also want them to know one day, I want them to look back and go, yeah, but he didn't just speak out. He gave. He gave of his time. He gave of his treasure. He gave of his resources to partner and stand with folks that needed it. Can that be said about you? That doesn't mean we always have it figured out. Doesn't mean we're always perfect in that. But what are we doing? What are we doing for the neighbors around us? What are we doing for the kingdom? How are we serving? I want people to know I'm pro-life by the words I speak, but I also want them to know I'm pro-life by the things that I do. And it's the same thing with the gospel. I want people to know that I'm a Christian by the words that I speak, but I also want them to know that I'm a Christian by the things that I do. And they go hand in hand. And so how do we do that? Well, first, you can go to investinghope.com and partner with us in doing that work. As I said, this week is Battle of the Bottles, so this Friday we'll be at Grace as Grace and CAK play their football game, big rivalry, and at halftime we'll announce how much money we have raised, and we're going to be picking up different times this week the amount of money, and then next week I'll update you on how much we raised. But like I said, since the beginning they've raised over $145,000, and the reason why we do this is obviously we do it because we want to make sure that our patients are taken care of, but also because we want to have conversations with these students to let them know there are people in this city that need help, and they can help them. They can help them simply by filling a bottle up with change. And these students show out because of it. And I've had students that have gone through and done this, and they've graduated, and they come back, and they want to intern at Hope, and they talk about the learning about Hope Resource Center through the Battle of the Bottles and wanting to do something about that. We had a third grade class just the other day bring us diapers and wipes and items for baby shower. So young people are starting to see, look, I need to be active and engaged in this process, and we're grateful for that. We're grateful for you. We'll talk to you next week.